Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, I'm David Ross, and welcome to episode 19 of the Sons Israel's War on Terror podcast. Since the October 7th massacres, parts of Hollywood and the wider entertainment industry have been accused of failing to condemn Hamas in a meaningful way, or in many cases, at all. Celebrities often appear to call for a ceasefire in Gaza, but fail to mention the attacks, the use of human shields, or reference the hostages. At the biggest showbiz event of the year, the Oscars, director Jonathan Glazer, accepting the International Feature Academy Award for his film Zone of Interest, said, "We stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation." The Holocaust Survivors Foundation USA has condemned the speech as morally indefensible and disgraceful. Leo Perlman is the managing partner of the production company Fullwell 73. He's also Jewish and has spoken out a number of times since the October 7th attacks, and I interviewed him earlier to get his take on Hollywood's response and his experiences. I'd just like to get your take as someone in the industry. How have you found being a Jewish person in the entertainment industry, one who has spoken out about the atrocities of October 7th?
I think that both myself and we laid our stall out fairly early on. As a company, we made a statement October 9th or 10th, where we were very clear about our position on what was on the attack of October 7th. We were also very clear that loss of innocent life on any side is a tragedy, but we didn't shy away from saying that we were a company who were run by four Jewish partners who have a strong connection to the state of Israel. I think that since then, certainly while my own experience hasn't been directly affected, the stories that I hear, the people that have been across the industry, the Jews who work in entertainment, television and film in the UK, have experienced a quite significant negative response since. I think across society, we've seen a significant rise in anti-Jewish hatred, which has been widely documented, factually documented, and our industry is no different in that respect. It's a very hard time to, I would say, to be Jewish in this country more generally.
What, if anything, gave you concern before you spoke out on what happened? And was there a fear that there may be a career impact?
The reason that I spoke out was because I wasn't seeing anyone else doing so. I think that one of the most shocking things to me since October 7th well, certainly in those early first few days, was actually the silence. It amazed me that companies, broadcasters and talent, pretty much across the board, weren't coming out on October 7th, 8th and 9th and unequivocally condemning the attack of October 7th. Because let's be clear as well, there was no response from Israel until 8 days later. So the silence at that point was, and still is, unexplainable. The anti-Semitism that we saw, the rise in anti-Semitism, the anti-Semitic attacks, at that point, were not tied in any way to a response from Israel. One cannot label that as being anti-Zionist. One can only label that, unfortunately, as being anti-Semitic. The reason I spoke out was because others weren't. And I felt it was incredibly important to do so. I was already hearing within 2 or 3 days from so many young people in the industry that they were afraid to tell colleagues or employers that they were Jewish. Nothing to do with Israel. Nothing to do with supporting the state of Israel or otherwise, but they were afraid to say they were Jewish, afraid to check social media feeds for fear of being out. And that didn't feel like Britain in 2023 to me.
Now, Hollywood's celebrity culture and virtue signaling is nothing new, but how disappointed have you been by the entertainment industry in terms of its almost negligent referencing of what happened and the immediate condemnation of Israel and the lack of bravery there appears to have been on this issue?
I think it's relatively simple. There is absolutely nothing wrong. The starting point for the conversation is the desire for peace. If the starting point for the conversation is the desire for or the call for the end to the loss of innocent life, well, no one isn't in agreement on that point. Everyone feels exactly the same. And one can even disagree on potentially the path to reach that peace. However, if in doing so, you only condemn Israel, you make no reference to the hostages that are still held in Gaza, you make no reference to the fact the October 7th massacre perpetrated by the Hamas terrorists was the starting point for this particular conflict, then ultimately you are again anti-Semitic. And to fail to refer to both as tragedy, to fail to call, as I said, for both parties to act in the correct manner is very problematic. And I think that we've seen that, as I said, across industry. The issue in our industry, the issue in the entertainment world, is that the messaging is amplified exponentially more than from any other industry. When someone puts out a tweet and that it's to 9, 10, 12, 15 million people, or Instagram post, or TikTok, it's far different than someone who works in the NHS or someone who works in banking, for example, doing so. It has a real meaningful impact, and it influences a lot of younger people as well in a very negative manner. So I do think that there is a responsibility, and I think that our industry has broadly failed to meet that.
And it seems as though that failure is even more so in Tinseltown, in Hollywood, where there is a panic over taking, in inverted commas, aside, whether that is a celebrity afraid of upsetting their following or a lack of education that is a symptom of nations all over the world, or is it something more sinister? Where do you see to be the cause of the blind spot?
I think a large part of it is lack of education. I think a large part of it is the amount of influence that social media has, which is, you know, proven to be incredibly significant, especially with this issue. I think that there's a significant part of it, which is fear-based, that people are scared to risk their careers, their livelihoods, or even their safety. And on that last point, you know, it's I on the one hand, I think it's unfair to criticize people for their silence because people may have a very legitimate reason and fear, and still be doing a lot of good work behind the scenes across the board for the health and well-being of all parties. On the other hand, as I said, if you're willing to speak out, stand up, and call out one particular side, then I feel it is only right that you balance it and do so for all sides. And so on the most simple basic level, calling for a ceasefire but failing to recognize the hostages that are still held is hugely problematic. And that is taking sides.
And those sides were taken in quite large numbers at the biggest showbiz event of the year, the Oscars. People on red carpets promoting calling for a ceasefire when, as you say, not referencing hostages, no yellow ribbons, etc. How disappointed were you at what you saw from the Oscars coverage? And we'll get on to Jonathan Glazer shortly.
I'm afraid to say that I was completely unsurprised, saddened, but completely unsurprised. We've seen it since October 7th. We've seen it since October 8th. Every opportunity that our industry has to balance and offer context has been passed up. Wherever there is the opportunity to very clearly pin blame and shame on Israel has been taken. So the fact that at the largest and noisiest opportunity, the Oscars, that was the choice that was made, came as no surprise.
And then we had the award for Jonathan Glazer and the movie Zone of Interest, which is hugely critically acclaimed, it would seem, across the board. And I think a lot of Jewish people and Israelis would have been paying a reasonable amount of attention to that moment, wondering if he was going to win for that film, interested in seeing that film find a greater audience than it might do, perhaps under normal circumstances. And then a speech that for many was upsetting and bizarre in equal measure. What did you make of it? It's been widely criticized by organizations representing Holocaust survivors and elsewhere.
I stayed up for the Oscars this year for one reason alone, to see Zone of Interest win. It's a film that I found incredibly powerful, moving, beautifully made. I think it deserves all of the accolades that it received. I've used it as an example in conversations with friends and colleagues to deliver that message of complicity through silence, something that we've seen in the past and we can't let happen again. So I was excited for Zone of Interest.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
To win. I hoped it would surprise everyone and win Best Picture. But knew it would win, you know, the two that it did. I have to say that following on from that on Monday morning, I felt as low as I have done since October the 8th. I felt like this incredible opportunity for, at worst, a Jewish-British filmmaker to stand up on the world stage and offer balance, to call for the release of the hostages, to call for a ceasefire, to call for the end of the loss of life in Gaza, and to really land the point that silence was complicity, regardless of which side of the fence you sit on, and such an opportunity. And I felt like I and the whole community had been stabbed in the back by the words that he spoke. And I don't want to give him any kind of get out here. It's not caveating. He wrote the words down. He was very careful to do so. He delivered them emotionally, no doubt. But this wasn't an off-the-cuff speech. This was something he had prepared, knowing full well, arguably since the BAFTAs, that he was going to win. So even if one gives him the benefit of the doubt and say that the comment about refuting one's Jewishness was badly written, misspoken, let's pretend that that's the case. Ultimately, the piece that is unforgivable is that he blamed this entire conflict and the attack of October 7th on the occupation. So let's start with that. There hasn't been an occupation in Gaza since 2005 when Israel withdrew. Even if we get past that, call it an occupation. Sure, occupation and genocide are now words that are freely bandied around as if they're factually accurate. They're not. But let's say that is the case. He is saying that Israel's actions are to blame for the murder, kidnap, rape and torture of 1,400 Jewish people on October 7th. So whatever Jonathan Glazer thinks that he gained by making that speech, I really do believe that in the years to come, he's going to realize just how much he lost and how much damage he did to the Jewish community. Because Zone of Interest will still be just as powerful a film. It's still just as brilliant. He's just as brilliant a filmmaker. But every time that film is watched and every time it's spoken of, it's going to come with a huge asterisk. And the asterisk is going to say, the filmmaker tells you that this was the story about Jews not learning from the Holocaust and committing these crimes against the Palestinian people.
When there is a filmmaker or an actor in a piece of art that you love, when you then go to revisit it, the experience is entirely tarnished and can never quite be the same again.
I agree. Absolutely. That's my point around the film will always come with an asterisk now.
Now, tell us about the movie that you're involved in that is, I believe, an attempt to honour those that were killed and attacked at the Nova Festival. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're incredibly lucky. Feel very privileged to be making documentary feature about the Nova massacre. We're co-producing it with Sipur, who are an Israeli, brilliant Israeli company, with MGM. And it's actually being produced by Bitachon 365, which is a label, factual label for Will, a gentleman called Sheldon Lazarus. It's a film that is entirely made up of testimonial and footage from the attack itself. It follows the narrative of a number of the participants in the festival who went on October the 6th to a music festival based around love, community, spirituality, about peace. And who then were attacked on October 7th, as we know. It follows their story through the hours of the attack in semi-real time. And I hope it's a story that resonates incredibly strongly, incredibly powerfully, and make sure that we keep the memory of them alive for a good many years to come.
Now, as a video journalist, I've obviously seen a lot of footage from the October 7th massacres, and I'm sure you will have seen some footage before embarking on this project, but how have you felt with dealing with the source material?
You never become desensitized to seeing those kind of acts on camera or hearing those kind of acts on camera even. And it's not necessarily the most graphic moments that stay with you the longest. It's often actually the sound, the voices. What stayed with me perhaps the most was the joy, actually, that you saw and heard on the part of the terrorists who were committing those crimes. It was a celebration. It goes back to Jonathan Glazer using the word dehumanizing. It was something about those films where the footage on October 7th that was very clear. Perpetrators of those crimes didn't see the Jews they were committing them against as human beings. Couldn't commit those kind of atrocities if you did. And that does make one think back to the actions of the Nazis and the Holocaust. And yeah, that's something that stayed with me forever, having to sit through or watch that.
And I'd imagine you feel a greater sense of responsibility to do this film justice than maybe some of your other projects, and that's not diminishing the quality or the value of it.
Listen, there is a huge responsibility when telling stories of this nature. I think it's interesting as well, because if one simply looks to create content that shouts into an echo chamber, then really, what are you doing? This isn't a film that needs to be seen by, I would argue, by Jews or Israelis. It's a film that needs to be seen broadly by the world, so that people are unable to deny the truth of what happened on that day, because there has been this incredible campaign to gaslight the truth ever since October 7th, in particular with regard to the sexual attacks and rapes. And let's not forget, this is footage that was filmed by the perpetrators and broadcast live to the world in celebration. The idea that now we have this seemingly online campaign to deny that it took place or the true horrors took place is so abhorrent. So what we're trying to do is make a film that will be watched by people who sit in that huge silent majority in the middle, who aren't quite sure, who are having to listen to conflicting points of view, conflicting facts. And now we're going to put this in front of them and say, okay, well, here's the story. That's what the impact has to be, I think.
And whilst you do what you do and you speak out in your industry, and it sometimes feels like nobody is listening, does the reaction from those who do offer support do enough to give you hope for the future? Or are you someone who is so deeply concerned about the current status quo that you're looking at your industry and thinking we may never get to where we need to get to?
I'd go broader than that. I'd say I've had innumerable conversations with British Jews who asked the question, will my grandchildren grow up in this country? Now, they may not be looking at it as an immediate necessary response, but they're having conversations that so many of our grandparents who survived the Holocaust warned us about for so many years, we should always consider. And myself, like so many others, dismissed them as scaremongering. You know, my grandma escaped the Holocaust. She fled from Munich with her family. We lost 30-odd members of our family, and she was one of the lucky few. And she would often say to me, don't be naive to think it couldn't happen again. And I would absolutely turn to her and say, there is no chance, absolutely none whatsoever. I'm incredibly grateful that she is not around anymore to see what is going on at the moment in our country. I really am. So we have those extreme conversations. Whether we mean them or not, I don't know, but we're having them. But I absolutely lived with the hope and the belief that anti-Semitism is not something that the vast majority of people in this country are prepared to accept or allow or live with. Now, many of them may not fully appreciate what that means. They may not understand the conflation between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. They may need to be educated to some degree. Many of them would be appalled to hear that they're saying or doing things that Jews would view as anti-Semitic. So I do definitely live with the hope and the belief that as long as we keep working, as long as we keep talking, as long as we keep trying to build relationships and community and conversation, that we will fix the problem and the issues that we currently are experiencing. The biggest issue is division. The biggest issue is that communities are being driven apart. It's a broad problem in this country, no doubt about it. And it's important to say that there has undoubtedly also been a rise in Islamophobia since October 7th. Shall increase that we've seen of anti-Semitism, but an increase nonetheless. And for the Jewish and the Muslim communities to start talking, start being brave enough to talk, that's the first step necessary. So I definitely live with hope, no doubt.
Filmmaker Leo Perlman there, the managing partner of the production company Fulwell 73. Well, that brings an end to this installment of Israel's War on Terror. You can search for more episodes wherever you typically get your podcasts. Please let us know in the comments if you've any issues you'd like us to discuss, and we'll do our best to take them on in the coming weeks. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.